Okay, we are go.
So we will call to order the regular meeting and public hearing of the North Bend Planning Commission Thursday, March 22nd, 2018. I am Scott Heller, the new chair of the Planning Commission, recently elected in, and we'll do a roll call. So Commissioner Gildersleeve?
Here.
Commissioner Ryan?
Here.
Commissioner Lucky?
Yes, sir.
Commissioner Von Trapp? Commissioner Miller? Commissioner Fancher? Okay, so we do have a quorum. Next, we will approve tonight's agenda. Do I have a motion?
Commissioner, I move to accept the agenda.
All right.
Present.
A second?
Second.
Any comments or changes? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. It's unanimous. Next, we will approve the minutes from last meeting, March 8th, 2018.
Mr. Chair, I read the minutes, and I move you through the minutes of the February 27th.
We have a second?
Second.
Comments or changes? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. It's unanimous.
Sorry, did you second?
That yes.
Okay.
Okay, so next up, public comment on non-agenda items. Does anyone have anything not on tonight's agenda referring to the clearing, grading, filling, and drainage portion?
Yeah, Michael Thomas, 1231 LaForest Drive, SE. Thanks to the commission for allowing me to speak, and I'm glad to be back. Sorry for my absence, and I look forward to continued participation. One of the things I wanted to take note of is our increasing approval of increased density, really with respect to things like cottage residential. I mean, these things are going up to, you know, 16, 10 units per acre, both near downtown, as well as increasing in density in areas that were before. I kind of view the code, and people want to correct me, kind of large cottage clusters throughout all of LDR through the whole city, with except by permit exception. So I'm very concerned that we're really increasing our density in an unplanned fashion, even outside of the zones that we intended, both the cottage residential zones that are identified as well as the three-quarter mile radius within the city. I'm very concerned about impacts to our infrastructure, how we plan for that. How do you do traffic planning when you start doing, you know, these little cottage clusters in neighborhoods that have never had them before? How about water and sewer, road damage? So I'm a bit taken aback by the approval of this, and I think as a planning commission, how are you going to plan for this? How does city planning address these concerns? And even, we have trouble in our downtown core with traffic already. I see the strain on water. It's obvious to me that as we increase, you know, demand for water, someone in our areas needs more water. We know who it is. So what about water through our city? Same thing for sewer. We're going to start bumping up against sewer limits. You know, yes, we have a plan. Yes, there's a great plan to improve it. But is our growth outstripping our infrastructure on our roads, sewer, and water? And as I think about, you know, things especially like water and sewer, some of those things are really related to things like temperature or environment. Do we need to reduce temperature in our area? Is our sewer plant getting too hot? Those kind of things. Is the discharge too hot? Maybe later when I talk about trees, the relationships of trees and cooling might be very important in this topic. So I do want folks to think about our density as we increase it, that we increase it intelligently, and how do we plan for it when we've increased density everywhere in the city? Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. As far as the public hearing, do you want to start introductions
sure.
first?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we can do that since we have some new people. In attendance. So tonight, once the chair opens up the public hearing, folks are welcome to, ideally, if you could sign in if you know you're going to speak on the sign-in sheet over there, and then you're given approximately 3 to 5 minutes. It's at the discretion of the chair if you'd like to make a comment. And Tonight we're going to be looking at amendments to the tree code, which is in our clearing and grading regulations, and this is the third meeting that the Planning Commission has been reviewing these amendments. They are proposed for many, there's many different pieces in the amendments. The goal is really to retain existing trees as much as we can. Right now, our code defines significant trees, and those are fairly large trees, and it requires retention of a certain percentage of those trees. And it doesn't count the ones that are really great trees that are just below that size. And so we feel like we're missing some of that succession of the forest that you're going to get where you have a variety of sizes of trees. The other things we've run into is the large ones are great to save, and they do get a little bit more preference in the new code up to a certain point, but they take a lot of space to save, and they have a lot of wind vulnerability issues if you leave them in small, you know, rows, or when they lose their forest environment, they're more vulnerable. And they haven't been used to growing up around new development. So a lot of times the trees that are maybe just under the threshold are still significant in that they're 20 to 30 years old, and we want to account for those. We've noticed that our requirements for what we're asking applicants to submit need to be buttoned up a little, just so we get a really good plan of what do we have to work with. Have we designed around the trees and the landscape versus, for you know, thinking about it after the fact, and really making sure that we protect during engineering and during grading. And then we've strengthened some of our bonding requirements and just to make sure that, you know, there's some teeth behind the code. Other changes are, right now, if you have a piece of land that really doesn't have any trees, you'll have some landscaping that's put in, parking lot landscaping, or maybe some perimeter landscaping, a tree in a yard, but you're not going to get a lot of forest back. The new regulations have a minimum standard regardless. So in some ways, we have some scenarios that we went through. The properties that are more forested have an easier time meeting the regulations because they have more to work with. But the ones with no trees are now going to be required to come up to meet that baseline for tree. The Planning Commission's talked about tree canopy and getting at that. What we're proposing is a tree unit credit, and it's based on per square foot. And like I said, you get credit for a variety of sizes of trees. We've also included exceptional trees, which are really unique, just really neat, usually larger and older, but there can be larger and older trees that are about ready to die or diseased. So they have to be healthy, and again, if it's something like that's on the site, it needs to be worked around. And that's just really important. Seems like it was really important to everyone. Let me see if I have just clarifications. Like I said, buttoning things up. And I think that gets to the big picture stuff. Like I said, we have a few examples that are new that we would kind of talk through tonight, and if the commission has any other things they want to add in, but I think we could, you know, open up the public hearing from that and then go from there.
Okay. Well, we will open the public hearing. It's 7:11 now. And should I grab the list or just start with whoever wants to go first?
Anybody that says anything, who wants to go first?
Okay. Yeah, so the way the process will work, I'll set the timer for 5 minutes, and then you know, during that time, share your comments related to the public hearing, which is the tree retention amendments to the North Bend Municipal Code, Chapter 19.10, clearing, grading, billing, and drainage. And then you'll go through and give your comments, and if there's questions, then that's when either David or Jamie can kind of go over those. And then we'll close the public hearing, and then there'll be deliberation with the Planning Commission over this topic. So. All right, so who would like to start? Any hands raised? Is there anyone going, who's all going to speak tonight?
Mr. Chair, I believe we start from right to left.
Michael, would you like to start?
Sure, I'll go first. Michael Thomas, 1231 Forest Drive, SC. And thanks for the opportunity to speak on this important topic. Trees are personally important to me. I live along in communities called the Forest, and I live on Cedar Falls Bay, and I love that drive. It is spectacular. It is a representative of how North Bend used to be, and I'm hoping that we can preserve it. I'd like to see more trees. Certainly, I receive a lot of pleasure from seeing a very wooded neighborhood and trees everywhere. I think we have some spectacular examples where I take extreme displeasure. I don't take any pleasure in seeing the denuding of the neighborhoods that we have. I don't like the density that we have. Every single new development, Cedar Falls, Cedar Falls South, River Glen, the cottages at North Bend, the cottages at near the Ranger Station, River Glen, these are all denudes. There's nothing left. It's zero escape. At best, there's a handful of trees on the perimeter. So I think that's an example of where the existing code maybe has gone wrong. And really, and I think a lot of that has to do with our building standards. You dig all these utilities, you put in everything else, you put in roads, and it has to be a clear cut. But that's done for the convenience of the developer and developer profit. It has nothing to do with affordable housing. Nothing that I would call that we've built in the past 10 years as affordable. It's a $600,000, $750,000, $850,000 home. Affordable. So I would not say it's really affordable housing. I'm just very concerned about the trend. Now, there's some things I do like in the code. I like the idea of a tree canopy as well as tree restoration. I'm seeing some alarming examples of people sort of pre-cutting their trees, maybe along Cedar Falls and a few neighborhoods. I think the tree restoration would be an important consideration that require replanting. If somebody clears their property ahead of sale development, you've lost those trees permanently. And this, I'm very concerned by that. So I like the fact that the code that it's canopy, that we actually require something in replacement. So I think that's a good aspect of our code to look at. It's a little bit difficult when I read the new code about how to translate this and how this really, maps to tree preservation or trees that would get saved. That I felt was a little difficult for me. So you need some help to actually give examples of that. Maybe there'll be some more later that are discussed. So I think that's something important for citizens and council to remember. To me, there were also, I had a question actually about how cottage residential and cottage clusters fit in. It wasn't clear what the percentage canopy required was. There was a section in the code that mentioned sort of a percentage or much farther. It's like cottage residential, like urban. That to me was unclear. So because you've got duplexes in cottage residential. So that's not single family residential, so I could use some clarification on how to treat cottage residential and the tree preservation code there. That I think was really an important consideration. I personally like to see the trees, the more that we can save, the better. I know there's pragmatics, if you want to respect that. In the forest, we've been through a large sidewalk repair program. The good news, actually, we were actually to fix all of our sidewalks, and it was one tree, not one. Through various tools, some of them quite creative, in fact. So it can be done, but I think you have to have a willingness to do it. I think there's a great example along Cedar Falls SC. You've got people site their homes and save trees, not the other way around. Okay, are there things that we can do in our code that force that? Those people call that five-star build, but it's not the kind of added square development with utilities running in nice lines and streets. It's more random placement. Yeah, it might be more expensive, but is that something to think about? Where am I at time, by the way?
You have about another minute.
Finally, I want to leave you with something, and I'll leave you through these till the end of my time. I thought it was very interesting was this report I found from ectrees.org, and I bought a couple copies through you, which kind of give tons of references on the benefits of trees. And I'll just, I hope you'll read through them. But as you know, as we think about, temperature, we need to make our
Sorry. I think they make it a little cooler. You know, maybe we don't have enough trees to keep the river cool or our air cool because our sewer plant's going to hit limits because our sewage is so hot. Trees have economic benefits. Actually, if you look on the very second page, you know, a large tree over 40 years is a $4,000 benefit per tree. You know, you're reducing stormwater runoff. 50 to 100 gallons a tree. You know, each tree absorbs, you know, 120, 240 pounds of particulates. Just step through these sometime. You know, it helps capture runoff that otherwise goes into our river. They're good for noise reduction. As I think about, we totally remove so many trees from that area by 19 Austin. We've got noise buildup. So as we remove these things, our noise is going to get worse in our, and, you know, our quality of life reduces. It reduces driving speed. So a big problem we have from town people speed. Well, trees are shown to reduce driving speed. And, you know, there's a bunch of other things here. They reduce road maintenance costs. We're always complaining about how much it costs to maintain our roads. Shade cools roads. That reduces road wear. There's an interesting one about Portland, Oregon. Trees add an average of $7,000 to the price of a house. Up to 37% of residential property values are associated with the presence of trees. I mean, there's all kinds of things in here. So I invite you to really look through it. You know, energy efficiency, which helps reduce housing costs. You know, we talk about housing affordability. Well, hey, if it's, you know, a couple, you know, you save 8 to 20% on heating and cooling costs, that saves money. That's affordable housing. You know, there's all kinds of benefits in here. I urge you to step through it and really think about really longer term, you know, what's the benefit. Finally, there was one thing that I actually noticed on the very last page, which was our required canopy. There's a suggestion here, it wasn't clear in our code, is that suburban residential zones, which I think is the majority of our city, they're calling for a recommendation of 50% of tree canopy for the Pacific Northwest. So this was on the last page. So I'm curious as to what our sort of recommended canopy is for zones throughout the neighborhood. So if folks could address that question, I'd really appreciate it. And with that, you know, I know I'm close on time. I just want to leave you with that. Please take time to read the report. I thought it was very interesting in a way of really qualifying and quantifying some of the benefits of trees, not just, you know, hey, we're doing it. You know, it's there's some real concrete data in there that I thought had some very good value statements. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right. Do you have a comment you'd like to?
Yeah.
Yeah, name and address for the record, and then you have 5 minutes.
Slowly watching the destruction of the forest canopy throughout the last 10 years. And a lot of it, some of it is attributed to development, but some of it is just census. I don't really see any reason for it. As I drove here tonight, I've been keeping an eye on that parcel of Cedar Falls Way, where they have these two extraordinary firs on that property. All the rest of it is a field. And so they took that, it's one of its mains down last week. And I can see absolutely no reason whatsoever as to why they took that one tree down. And I sat here at the Planning Commission meeting last month or a couple weeks ago. And listen to everything that you all had to say regarding your ordinances. And I learned a lot. Of course, I've learned a lot from Dick Ryan over the years because of his association with Weyerhaeuser and our mutual activities with land use planning. And I built my own home on five acres. And it's a timber frame home. So we're talking some pretty big trees. And hopefully it will last 500, maybe 1,000 years that way. At least it burns down because of wildfire. But in Europe, when you build a home like that, you're supposed to plant a tree for every little foot that you take out. There's a replacement to repair that structure over time. And I used to get into some pretty heated arguments with some of my Weyerhaeuser friends about the baby there's an assumption, I think, on the part of all of us nowadays that, well, we'll just cut it down and we'll plant something in its place. I don't think the climate change, we can depend upon that anymore. The reason I'm late is because I had to have my tree service out because my alders are dying all over the property. And that's a result of the ice storm that happened about 4 or 5 years ago, and then the last couple of years of drought. These alders are not mature by any means, and they're dying. So the assumption that we can just cut it all down and replant it, that just doesn't hold water anymore. The UW campus in Bothell is, they have a creating a class for university students on how to deal with the losses associated with climate change and all the changes, all the things that they're going to be feeling at the time. I said I live up off of Sioux Falls Road, and at this point, we've got 15 heavily wooded acres. There's 100-year-old trees on my property. There's a 10-degree difference between my property up there and what's happening down here in America. 10 degrees. And every year it gets worse. So I'm happy to see that the commission is really looking carefully at retaining trees and what to do. But I actually think that North Bend needs to develop a tree ethic. And it needs to be infectious. It needs to be something that the entire community embraces. And that includes all developers or any individual that wants to come to the city, you know, to get a permit to develop. And I agree with this gentleman. I just didn't hear everything that he had to say, but when I see developers just come in and say, well, why do we need to save any of the trees? Why do we have to have all these property parks? We live in this wonderful area. We're surrounded by forests, natural forests, that are, Forest Service lands, parks. And so there's a jaded opinion, I think, about what we have and what we really need to retain. So I've been through the ordinance, and I'm glad I sat here because just listening to everybody talk about tree diameter and how much you know from the drip line and on and on and on, what you have to say. There's all these different formulas, but I tell you, the one thing that's really going to make people save trees is they actually see a benefit. So I have to take down probably a 40-year-old tree. It's going to cost me about $500 to pull a tree down. Well, I've lived on that property now for 30 years. I figure I've got $500 worth of shade and oxygen and birds and seeds and all the things that happen when you retain the natural environment. And so I think really it needs to have sort of more or less a monetary benefit. People who have trees, an incentive for them to retain their trees. And absolutely, I understand they're awarding points for retaining different size diameters and whether they're significant trees or specimen trees. But I think it needs to be much more than that. And I don't really know how we would go about doing that. I think we need to invent the wheel. There's communities all over the globe who have found solutions to living in harmony. And I think one goal should be helpful. You are a member of the Trees in the USA. That's your look that up. But you know, that has absolutely no teeth. And I saw that this was going rich. I said, Mommy also remembers Trees in the USA. And I was also there the day that the bulldozers came in and completely cleared the hillside. Absolutely denuded it. When they planted trees back, it was going to be a long time before those trees were significant. And they may all die. You go up and down I-90 right now, there's all kinds of, especially the cedars, suffered over these last couple of years. And we could lose all of our significant trees and the ones that are in between. So I think North Bend needs to be extremely what they're going to do about the current residents that are here.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I think you can close the hearing now, and then we can discuss.
We will close the public hearing at 7:27.
Okay. Do you want me to address the couple of questions that I think?
Sure.
So, from Mr. Thomas, there was a question about the cottage, residential, the cottage clusters, and how we address those. If you go to page 14 of the packet, the table there, and a couple hours ago we were running the other scenario, which we'll go through shortly, about the cottage plat.
That's the page, actually. That was the question. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. And so the clarification would be that under single family, we have the asterisks. If lots are less than 7,500 square feet, you reduce the credit in half. That would be for a downtown commercial lot, like a one-off infill or something like that. If you're a cottage development and you're flatting, you know, a large piece of land, you fall under the standard single family, which is that one tree credit per 1,000 square feet. So we'll make sure that's clear, that you only get that reduction if it's downtown commercial or on a small lot. That was that question. And then
how do duplexes fit in?
Duplexes.
That's not single family, or is it? That was kind of,
well, duplexes are usually considered multifamily, so that would be under the second category. So it's almost the same credit, 0.75, that you need for that. The canopy question, like I said, Planning Commission has talked about this. We do think it would be, you know, it's a goal of the city, I think, to hire an urban forester and to have somebody on staff. You know, when that can happen financially, we'll see, but it's definitely being talked about, and it's something that we would see value in. We think the citizens would. I provided a memo it was a white paper from City of Kirkland. It has some good information in it. It's right after the it's about the third page into the packet, and really talks about how do tree unit credits compare with the tree canopy, and what do you end up getting? We haven't taken our code as far as setting a goal, and this could be something we start with our comprehensive plan and set a goal of canopy. In our low-impact development ordinance, which is one property in our city is what that amounts to, there is a 40% canopy goal. 40% is what I've seen a lot. And so this white paper, it's been about a week since I read through it, but this area that they're talking about, Holmes Point, was an existing pretty heavily forested area that was annexed into the city. And so the citizens are concerned with the development they're going to see. And so they wanted to really enhance the tree protection and the canopy requirements. And what they found, I think, was that with their current tree unit credits, which are really in line with what we are proposing, that they get the 40% tree canopy. So, like I said, we haven't set a standard across the board. We're starting with the tree unit credits. It's something we can always consider and add later. And ultimately, the goal is to get that tree succession and to maintain that canopy and even enhance it over time. So there is some canopy language in the draft code. to that. And I think that was it for questions. Yeah.
Yeah, that's this one. All right. Well,
so I've got just a couple pictures that I took around town. And then we could go through the scenarios if you want. And then you provided this. Mm-hmm. Do you want to?
It's not a good angle because I was having you use IMAP overview. But the photo, the older photo, was taken about 1955, shortly after, just before actually E.J. Roberts was starting his major push to build the development we now call Silver Creek. And while you see what's, he did retain some trees. Those that you see are actually on lots that he had pre-sold in order to raise the money to build the development. Most of what you see in the foreground in that is actually scrub brush. And I do have a photo that shows that a bit better that's on ground level. And I wanted you to see that we often bring up Silver Creek as an example of one of our ideals, what we want to see. And this is just a very clear example of the fact that it didn't start out that way. What we see now a number of the trees that you see in E.J. Roberts Park actually have been there pretty contiguously. And you can see a little bit of that stand of trees. It's hiding behind the big tree that's here. If you follow that back, there's a little curve, and that's E.J. Roberts. So a number of those, he did save quite a few trees in certain areas, but most of it was actually cleared. And while he was waiting to actually get the money to build the houses, this kind of scrub brush that was, in some cases, about as tall as I am, grew up in that area. And now we have this amazing, well, it doesn't show you the variety of heights of trees, we have this kind of thing that's held up as an example of what we want to see. And I just think as we're talking about developing a plan that allows a succession of sizes of trees, is to realize that we can end up with this absolutely beautiful place that I am lucky enough to live in, coming out of what was scrub brush with a few great trees saved. As we were thinking, I just thought that was a great example of what we're talking about. It's trying to make sure that we have this.
Mm-hmm. Really emphasizes the dichotomy that we hear in the discussion because, as we saw in a letter that we received from Robin Farland, that the Growth Management Act is trying to force us to densify beyond what we're recommending as staff and beyond what the public really wants to see. But that's where we get the pressure from the state. And, it's more than a property rights issue that people have a constitutional right to move and live where they want to. And that's something nobody wants to give up. So when you take those values and you put them together with the high value of really appreciating where we live and wanting to save as much as we can, I think you're showing a good example of the period from 1950 to present, where even though people are developing and they are putting, new places for folks to live and roads and everything else, that if they plant carefully and retain what they can, particularly in areas where you're not going to develop, and we have acquired a lot of open space to keep the way it is. But if we, part of the dichotomy is when we call a community Tree City USA, it's largely not because they're preserving existing trees as development occurs, it's because their reforesting efforts are pretty robust. And the difficult thing and that I've seen in that is a lot of people go for ornamental trees which don't represent our native tree cover. So one of the things we've tried to emphasize more and more in our landscape plans and in the ordinance is planting native trees and reforesting native tree areas. So that's one of the things we're really trying to push.
And that's what I think actually this is a good example of. One of the things that E.J. Roberts did very deliberately in this, if you can't see it very well, contains a lot of the old cedars that were in that area. So that you have these beautiful cedar trees that have continued to grow, that are really, really tall now in some cases, that are spread throughout that area. Even though he did clear large swaths of it, he left these kind of sprinkled around the landscape so that it wasn't completely gone. And I think it speaks to a little bit of what we're trying to accomplish with this, is allowing a balance and trying to avoid plains where there were once trees.
May I ask a clarifying question? What's the density of Silver Creek? Like, how many homes per acre was that when it was built?
See, it's a mix because you have some farmsteads in there that are on large lots. And you have some that are on small. I think there are some that I don't think even hit half acre. Well, they're smaller than half
acre. Right, there's some that are smaller. It's a big mix.
I'm on a large lot, so I'm a little bit kind of like asking me how big. I can tell you that we're on 3/4 acre. Yeah.
I guess my point there would be, does the old building code and density allow people to have trees and allow those things to reforest, whereas our new code, there's no opportunity, there's nothing. Nothing is going to be left except for these tiny little trees. And
I think a lot of that's just a function of economics at this point, but not just for developers, for people who want to buy housing. And we've seen it. We've seen lots get smaller. We've seen that... you know, people don't have the large acreages they used to have, and it's not economical for them. If we did that, we'd have something akin to what we had in California, Atherton, a community that's highly exclusive and exclusionary because you couldn't afford to live there unless you were extremely rich. And so the problem we face is, where's the market today that people can build to, but at the same time, how do we keep a high-quality environment? And the kind of approach we've taken to that is to try to acquire as much open space as we can, exceed what the national average is considerably for our park acreage, and to try to use these kind of measures to retain as many of the significant trees as we can, and to require significant replanting. And so when I look at a development, it's very hard for me. I have the same sentiments that all of you do. I'd like to say, as many of the trees on it as I can. We have a lot of competing interests. We have storm water requirements that are just extreme and drive development here incredibly. You have the cost of a lot and the cost of housing. And so what I like to do is to take any of those areas along the trails and pathways that we require, or the entry features to developments that we require, or the street trees that we require, or buffer areas. We're having people look at the cottage zoning, you know, along Cedar Falls Way, and looking at buffers with the cottage zoning, as well as that whole frontage of single-family homes that exists along the frontage that they're not touching because they're looking at land behind it. So I think part of it is creating these boulevards that are screened well, so that where you might have trees disappear behind them, just as Elizabeth was saying, that those significant areas that are well forested, that they're left, and that you reforest within the areas that you're putting the housing in. But, you know, I don't think any of us should be fooled. There will be a change in the urban form and the landscape as development occurs here. And what we need to do is balance, you know, these values. And it's easy when you don't sit in a place where you have to evaluate and balance those issues to say, geez, you're just not preserving trees. But I think what we do more than anything in this profession is mediation. We have regulations we have to implement, but at the same time, we're trying to balance the needs for housing and the needs for, you know, storm drainage and the needs for getting utilities in and all of that kind of thing, with trying to save as many trees as we can and reforesting as effectively as we can. So it's not a fun thing to do, but you do understand that there are many competing interests here. And I think whenever you bring an ordinance forward, you're going to have people on both sides of the issue that aren't happy. Believe me, there are a lot of development people not happy with this ordinance. And so You know, you just have to balance those things. And, you know, I've been, you know, I was born in Washington, and so long ago you'd think I need a headstone now. But, you know, when I look at the changes that have happened and I look at the kind of Manhattanizing of Seattle, it is disturbing. And, you know, we're overheated around here now with growth. And so we're really feeling a very unusual onslaught of growth that most people don't feel. And that's going to stir up a lot of these emotions. And that's when you have to really create a balance where you hold the line. And so that's why I'm kind of proud that we're going in this direction. We don't think the existing provisions of the grading and clearing ordinance, we don't think they work. And so we went back to a professional arborist and said, what are people using that works better? Because we know we're going to get urban development, but we want to use the best standards that are out there. And that's kind of the beginning of this, the genesis of this.
Yes. I'd like to make a comment about the package tonight. I joined the Planning Commission when Mr. McFarland was chair. I was respecting him. And when I read his letter, my first reaction was, very harsh. I go back to the Board of Management days that I was talking about. And it brings in, I sat on the first committee back in the mid-80s discussing both management and Swan Valley. And looking at Liz with the picture, she and I looked. We didn't have white hair back in the 84. We're older trees now. And we're still for
extraordinary, exceptional.
But Rob makes the point that the Growth Management Act came about because we needed to protect areas that were under political pressure to change. The forested areas were being infringed upon. The urban areas are being scattered. Everything was just sort of. Was zoned 1 acre. The devil took the hind ones. That was how we were zoned back in the 60s. 1 acre lots, countywide. So that was a major effort to bring together zones that were in production, zones that were for housing, zones that were for preservation. And that Rob was, I believe what his point was in his letter was that we were, in our zoning, was trying to actually go a step further with what was necessary to preserve forests within the urban and suburban areas. And my first read on that was, I think there was a false hearing. But I read it again tonight, and I changed my mind about it. Rob had the right idea in his letter about trying to over-regulate every single tree that's inside an urban growth area. You can't do that. Try as you may. Strong in the position of making sure we have plenty of vegetative growth, including trees and other vegetation in my growth area. I'm also chair of the KCD. One of our main focus points now is restoring the urban canopy inside of Seattle. It's a tree desert, and it's an equity and social justice issue with the lack of trees in our highly suburban areas. We're going to fix that. So we can't go that far and not preserve trees in our urban area. We need to regulate the development, the triple development of not only trees but all vegetative life that gives us renewal. And so I'm supporting, by and large, tonight, but I think we've gone too far in the regulatory side. And what really got my goat is I began reading about how every tree is going to be deeded, or is going to be referred to in a deed as the purview of the city. If I want to do anything to my larger tree, I've got to go to the city to get permission. I think that's way beyond the pale. I would not support that. We've got to find a way to get around that. The city controls every tree on our land. I don't think that's what we want. tends to make us think that we've been driven to that point by what we see happening in the last 5-10 years. And so this is an overreaction, I believe, to try to stop that. So I want to encourage us to find a way to not go to that limit where we're going to start charging people for doing something on their own trees, on their own land. That does not seem American, doesn't seem to be constitutional. I understand that the city has the right to do certain things like that when it comes to shoreline issues and things of that sort. But when the trees aren't significant to sensitive areas and they have the right to tell me like what I can do with my larger trees, I find that's a stop sign for me. I don't want to do that. But I do think we need to find a way to help the developers find the financial wherewithal to provide trees in our new areas. I don't know, the work around that is crazy. We might end up with houses canting office to each other to make room for power lines, whatever you need to get into the houses. It's expensive to do that kind of thing. I recognize that, which takes away the affordability issue. But I also understand the health issue more than you realize. How important it is to our well-being to have trees in our close proximity as well as on our horizon. It's not enough to be able to walk on a trail and get to the trees. It's more important to be able to wake up and see a tree in your backyard. And so I want us to make sure we always find a way to do that. But I urge the city to rethink the draconian measures that are available to them in this code to punish landowners who bring something to the trees that they feel they have to do.
Dick, could you point out where you think those provisions are?
For that. Beginning with 1910-140. Enforce the key construction and development. Beginning with page 28, 1910, 110, all the way down to 140. If I just read the language, tell me where I am, but I don't think I am. It allows the city to go onto a landlord's property and mitigate issues because of what they've done to the real property.
So it looks to me like this starts out with saying that homeowners associations or individual property owners would contract with a qualified professional for ongoing tree care, including trees located in, what's NGP?
Native growth protection, isn't it?
Okay. So somebody buys a home and they've got a native growth protection area, they know they have the easement, right? I mean, they know it when they buy it.
Presumably.
Or they have given the easement, one of the two. So it seems to me that they have the ability to either petition the city to remove the easement, not buy property with the easement, or not give it. Now, open spaces, that would be something, those are generally public.
Right. Well, maintained by homeowners could
or,
be.
Or in common ownership.
Mm-hmm.
In all new developments, the small parks are part of the HOA, so
mm-hmm.
the
right.
cities there.
Right, so they're commonly owned.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I distinguish that a little bit differently from a single family homeowner and a tree mm-hmm. in his yard.
Yep.
Because if there's a benefit that everybody in the homeowners association are accruing from that, and they bought into it to be able to keep that, I bet you'd get as many or more people upset about one individual wanting to take the tree down than people being opposed to doing it, and that's private.
And what I'm saying here, David, is that if I'm wrong, I admit to being wrong, but I want to make sure I am wrong.
Right.
As clearly pointed out, I could not be the one that would misread it.
Yeah, I think it's good to study it and look at it, because I don't think that's what we intended to do.
No,
if we
yeah.
did, then I think there's a problem with the ordinance.
Right.
A public rights of way, there again, sometimes people think they own public rights of way because they encroach in them. But we're all responsible to know.
I live on Tanner Road. I'm going to lose some trees because over the years, trees have grown up on public right of way. I know that.
Mm-hmm. And so that's an area where people do get upset. I mean, I came from a community where in the oldest part of town, people had built fences. They were parking their cars. They did landscaping. They had gardens. In fact, and then in a new part of town where we had robust trails, we had people taking their fences down and planting gardens out in the public portion by the trail. And we had to engage in code enforcement and say, you can't do that.
And who has a plan of something under a power line? I'm just saying that this, I saw this, I thought I was reading it correctly. It really hit my hot button. I didn't think that the city wanted to go so far as to be able to walk on to private property and tell a guy.
And I don't think we do. And that's why I think it's important to clarify it. Because if we're wrong, we need to correct it.
Yeah.
But if you make a statement like that and we don't see if we're wrong, then the prevailing attitude will be that we are taking people's property or doing something we shouldn't do.
So Dave, one thing that I see is on page 29, 19.10.140, and then under B, it talks about during, through construction. So that was my first thought when I read it, was that it was pertaining to, you know, these trees are mapped, they're identified, and then if they're taken down.
Because you're proposing development.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you have a site plan, you're doing work, you take out a tree.
Yeah.
That fell with all the B.
So there, you know, there is interface with private rights because a private person owns land when they're developing it. And I think what we've seen, we've had a lot of landowners come to us, not because of the developers doing things to trees on their property, but that they damaged the root zones. That's why we have that one diagram. Significantly for adjacent property. Now we're having people go up 10 to 20 to 30 feet beyond the development and at least looking to see, are you going to take somebody else's tree down by virtue of what you're doing? And I know the development community doesn't like that, but we've had individual property owners come to us, even since I've been here, in several instances where they're really upset because they know their trees are going to die because they watched the excavation and saw the root, majority of the roots on, you know, 180 degrees of the tree come out. And so, you know, we are going to have a little bit of that interface where one person's property rights against another are going to be involved. And we're trying to temper it and take specific examples. Whether you're talking about right-of-way or construction protection or things like that. The last thing in the world we need is to have code enforcement issues with private trees. I mean, on single-family plots, that's just not. I'm not interested in that. Mm-hmm. And I know that you work very closely with the arborist. I don't mm-hmm. think that mm-hmm. is what is intended, or in black and white here, or red and white here, as to what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. So I think we're trying to avoid that.
Attention. I understand what you're saying, David. I think I understand what you're saying, which is the focus here is on development through construction and that protection. Perhaps, and I don't know, perhaps the language that Dick's picking up on, I see some language starting on line 21 and 22 that seems to imply past construction. I'm not sure that needs to be clarified. Then again, down starting on 35, I'm not sure, because I'm not fully absorbed, but some of the statements there might be leading to that idea of past construction.
Yep.
I'm not sure.
Well, I would say the owner is still the developer, so has old ownership of the property.
Yeah, and I'm totally on board. I get the developer's responsibility all the way through, but I'm not sure if and maybe that's the language is some flavor that it's
that should be going both of those cases. It's through construction.
Yeah.
So through, and that's what the title of this section is: enforcement through construction.
Yeah.
and development. So, I mean, we can make that extra clear, but that's the intent. It's during the development, you know, and we, it's called, Jim called it fence creeping when you have fencing around a tree to protect it, and then the bulldozers are coming and working around, and they're parking trucks, and they're moving stuff, and then this fencing gets less and less. So it's to get at that, to make sure it's protected all the way through, and that, you know, if a tree was taken out, you know, line 35, I mean, that there's some recourse there, just so that it's honored all the way through the development.
Yeah, so the whole intention is during the development process. And of course, it's not a public piece of property at any time, unless you're in the public right-of-way. So, you know, there are a lot of private, you could call it an encroachment on private rights. But I think the other thing that we're saying is a lot of the members of the public are saying, we know you're going to be developing a lot and taking out a lot of these amenities. Give us some assurance that something's going to be protected. And part of this is just, if you don't have an enforcement tool, then that's kind of a joke, because if somebody takes it down, and most people would rather not ask for permission, but beg for forgiveness afterward, and that's usually the way it works. And,
you know, as I'm reading this, I just read it. Mm-hmm. But I've read a lot of these documents in my lifetime, and I just think probably it's not property title, because I read like through the file. Mm-hmm. You couldn't see it. And so now I'm reading this as the owner. There's still the property with the developer, not the shareholder. So I will admit to misreading it, but I think maybe we need to clarify the title there.
My tendency has always been
to trust and verify whatever mm-hmm. legal authority is writing.
Right. So, to your point, though, where we get into trying to regulate on existing lots that are not being developed. So, two things. Page 31, under the categorical exemptions, line 20 starts with existing single-family lot homeowners are exempt from needing a clearing and grading permit, unless the tree is considered exceptional. Okay? I just want you guys to be aware if you have any, you know, concerns. And then the next one on 23, property owners who are not proposing development do not have an exceptional tree or a tree within a native growth protection easement or critical area and meet that minimum tree density requirement also don't need a permit. So, you know, we had a recent property owner remove some trees, and we had to go out and say, well, you know, what were you doing? And it's uncomfortable because why are you on my property? And I can, they're my trees and I can take them. And you're looking around at his site and you see that he has a lot of other trees. So if he wants to take his trees, we think he should be able to without needing, you know, a special approval, without even needing to replant, which is what we would require now as a permit, a free permit, and replanting. So this gives that flexibility. Still a good idea to come in, check with the city, make sure you're using a tree removal company that's certified, and that you have other trees on your lot.
Right.
That's what we care about.
In this case, we also saw the trees around the levee. You know, the old rule of thumb was you shouldn't be planting trees on levees because they destroy the integrity of it. But what we're hearing now from the people who are maintaining levees, that when you remove them, it's much more dangerous mm-hmm. because you leave voids. And so, but part of what we look at when somebody's taking a tree down in an area that's questionable as to whether it's in an easement that's owned and operated by somebody that's doing flood control or in a trail area mm-hmm. or on their private property, we are responsible to go out and look. And the particular situation we have, we have plenty of pictures, and guys, well, these trees were diseased and dying. Well, you could see from the cross-section of what he cut, they were very healthy trees. So. There was no reason to do that. If you cut a tree down on your property, it doesn't make any difference whether it's diseased or not. But if it's in an easement or an area that has mm-hmm. some other public benefit or right, and you go off your property into it, then that's a concern. Mm-hmm.
If you have a landowner has 5 acres of larger rural zone property, and they're managing their land for timber growth, and they clear cut it, and then file for conversion, they're not granted conversion for 6-7 years. Because they didn't file for conversion on that prior to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that controlling authority between the state mm-hmm. and the county.
But I thought, when I was reading this, that this felt very controlling.
And it's meant to be during that development period.
Exactly.
Right.
So I accept that.
Right.
I just bought myself the glasses, how I missed the title.
Yeah. Well, when I read it, frankly, I mean, because we're not using, one of the things you're doing is when you have red and black, it's kind of hard to distinguish what you're trying to emphasize.
Yeah.
And the font's not a lot bigger. Normally, when this is all corrected and all the underlining in red goes away, the only thing in bold is the title. And I think the title speaks pretty clearly, an enforcement through construction and development. Maybe we could put that up front. Construction and development, semicolon, and then indicate what we're saying. So that people say right away.
It might help.
Yeah. But these are the kind of comments we want to see, because those comments that are either, like Michael's sort of said, what do you do in the cottage zone? We're going to get cottage development. We're going to get it in areas that are heavily treated. And, we need to relate to that. Or questions with regard to, are you regulating my property? We need to answer that.
So walk this out in the before and after story. The developer applies for a clearing grading permit. Part of that process, mm-hmm. he writes a check for fines and for other expenses, mm-hmm. including a survey of trees on the property. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big check depending on how many trees there are. And once that survey is complete, it's a matter of record forever, mm-hmm. even if that developer doesn't continue his process. So now let's just say he stops the development, the permit expires, still owns the land, and he's got 10 exceptional trees located on his property that he just discovered and recorded. How do we handle that?
Well, until somebody comes in and develops the property and makes, through some provision, a means to save the trees. I've seen people move public right-of-way lines around trees that are next to roads, and snake grows around them, even put them on a lane on either side of the tree.
Well, I'm saying there's no more development planned. The economy shifted on him.
Right.
Stopped the
so works. Nobody's developing anything, and none of the construction regulations pertain to that situation. Whether he has a survey or not is immaterial, because his bonds are given back to him. We return bonds. You undo the whole process of development, and it's trees on private property.
Okay, so now I look back at the language, and I'm looking at page 31,
mm-hmm.
line 20, item number 5 there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being devil's advocate, because mm-hmm. we write it down, it takes 5 years to go back and fix it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. the exceptional tree line there.
Right.
I can see that language being used against someone who wasn't able to complete his development process, but went so far as to record exceptional trees on the property.
Mm-hmm. But if let's say that person just keeps the property or sells it to somebody else, that information is still a record, and that person wants to take a tree down. If it's on private property, he has the right to do that. We're not regulating. We're attempting to save them. And I know in some communities, particularly, I know California real well, and there are some communities where if you have a tree over a certain size and it's deemed a heritage tree, you can't take it down. And if you do, you pay a heck of a fine. We don't have that in this ordinance. I'm sure there are people who would like us to have it in it, but we just don't. I mean, that's just not politically viable right now.
So I think it's good that you mentioned.
Well, I'm still rolling with it.
Okay.
So now the development stops. The surveys have happened, the matter of record for the trees. And over the next 10 years, cycle of the economy, it gets ramped up again, the plaque gets developed, and now Bob and Sally Smith own the house that has that tree in their backyard. Development's done.
Mm-hmm.
What's our code say if Bob and Sally Smith want to take that tree?
It basically says if it's on a single family lot that's privately owned, they have the right to do what they want with it. And that's why when you have a subdivision plat submitted and you have opportunities for open space or mini parks or whatever, that you try to design around keeping them in those commonly held areas so that they can be preserved over time. And that's why we really run into the rub up front. When, in fact, we just saw Cottage's proposal today, and we said, do you have a tree survey? Because he wanted reaction on his development. And he said, no. And we said, well, it's pretty hard for us to give you a reaction when we don't know how you're affecting significant trees or if any exist there. And you have some nice open space areas, but we don't know if they're placed properly. They might be placed properly, you know, in the way that all of us have looked at the ordinance and saying, hey, you're enclosing that open space very nicely, and, you know, it looks like a good plan from a plan view. But I learned a long time ago, looking at a plan view doesn't tell you much. You have to walk the property, you have to have those kind of surveys done, and you have to put all of that information together, and then it's a back and forth. It's a negotiation.
Yeah. So go ahead.
So to clarify the code of what we have in here, number 5, we added in that if you have an exceptional tree, it says unless the tree is considered exceptional. So if you have an exceptional tree, you're not exempt from a permit. So that was the direction that you guys gave. So before, we just said if you're a single family homeowner, you're exempt. So
what does that mean, though? So you need...
It means if you have an exceptional tree, then, and it's next to your house, and you fall under number 1, it's a threat to your house, it's a hazard, or it's dead or dying, you could easily remove it. Otherwise, I think the way the code is written, it's going to support retaining that tree. And that's what I heard you guys, you know, wanted to do. So if not, we can change it back to the way it was, where a single family lot homeowner is completely exempt, no matter what they have on their lot.
So Bob and Sally Smith,
right,
said that walk earlier. Today, without even implementing this change, is there any ramification for them to take their tree down when they're at a family picnic one weekend and three guys have saws? Can they just take the tree down?
Not if it's exceptional.
Okay, let's see.
Right. Are you talking about our current ordinance or under this one?
Well, the one we're evolving to, I guess.
This one.
Yes.
Yeah. I think what Jamie is saying, when we presented it to you all, they had the right to do that. And people took issue with that. And when the whole group is here, they said, we don't think for an exceptional tree.
Yeah.
That's what our values say, mm-hmm. No.
Right.
So we want to tell the council no.
Right. And I'm trying to, I'm not being direct because I'm trying to evolve the question. So mm-hmm. I get we're controlling the development process. That's pretty easy, permitting, bonding, et cetera.
Right.
But now that it's back into single family ownership,
right,
how do we protect that same tree that we made the developer spend thousands of dollars to survey and record and work around, now that it's in the private party's backyard,
and
we just throw that money away?
Yeah,
it costs more money to throw it away at the end of the day?
Not if we follow your direction.
Right,
they
so
must get a permit to remove it because they will have penalties.
And if they don't, if they don't, their penalties are on page 30, section D. And that's where... You know, in most cases, if somebody, again, we have the debate of was it hazardous, dead, dying, if you didn't come in and tell us that you were doing it, you took it, and you said it was. It's
did
kind of a...
heritage trees? Last time, were those trees named as heritage trees, the older?
No, just exceptional. That's our one definition that we've...
did this show up on the deed when home buyers about to purchase the property? Are they made aware that their heritage trees are...
Well, for his situation, no. I mean, they've lived on that property. But if it was in a development scenario under this code, then yes, that's possible. That tree could have a protection.
Generally, what we do when we have things like that have to endure, then we require something to be recorded against that piece of property.
Or a tract, like some of the plats
kind of
have tracts.
Yeah, and my
asking these questions.
And you know, my preference would be, if at all possible, to create an open space feature if it's in a subdivision that's large enough,
right,
where a homeowners group would maintain that
area,
amenity. You might have active or passive recreation around it, but it would be something that benefited everybody. It's a lot easier to deal with it then, because you're not. And so that's the way I would push somebody at the plat stage. But if we ended up with it in somebody's yard, we'd have to record something against it, or it's
a meaningless process. I have 10 exceptional trees in that. 10. I'm blessed with mighty old growth cedar and fir on my side, so they're there. In the environment we're leading ourselves into, would those 10 trees be recorded on the deed as being exceptional and do not touch?
That would all have to come about through the development process. We wouldn't retroactively go back and say, oh, we found exceptional trees. We're going to record something against your property. We can't record anything against your property unless you agree to it. Yeah. Right? So you can't go backward and do it. But
if I'm a new homeowner, I'm just trying to say, when I walk into North Bend, I see a house I want to buy, and there are exceptional trees on it. Those exceptional trees noted on the deed, and I should be aware of that before I sign.
They're not unless we have had something recorded. So if you're in an older subdivision, or you're in a house that was platted, the lot was platted some number of years ago, no, not at all.
Yeah,
do what you want with it, because we can't regulate it. You can't make these retroactive.
All I want to make sure is that we don't backdoor a new buyer. It's fine if it's recorded. Right. I know in advance before I buy it.
Right. Correct. Similar to Forester Woods, yeah. Those all have native growth protection easements. Yeah. It's on the title. They see it when they move in, and they can. Right. They've downed the trees before.
The new ordinance is up, and all of a sudden changes.
Right.
Couldn't do it. It's not legal.
No.
Anything that's recorded against your property, you have to agree to.
I hate to keep banging on this. So in his particular case, my guess is the development that might occur there with the minute amongst those 10 trees is probably not subdivision of lots. It's going to be adding on a bath, adding on another story, adding a garage or shop. So is this related to clearing and grading permit? Is that when we get involved here? Is that so that's the threshold?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the smallest amount of land disturbance?
I think it says, well, it's 50 yards of fill.
That's
an exemption.
Very little.
Exemption.
Could I call your attention to page 3, line 21?
Privy to it until a clearing and grading permit's issued. That's this control device, which surveys trees, right?
Apply for a building permit to build a garage.
That's what I'm getting to. Mm-hmm. This language is all about it gets started when someone comes in for a clearing
and grading. Correct.
And 50 yards of fill is one dump truck, or one double tandem dump truck.
It's not a lot.
So now we're forcing this relatively savvy landowner who's got 10 trees on his property to cut his trees down before he comes to the city to tell him about his garage shop he wants to build. Because if he doesn't do it beforehand, he creates a language just like we're writing it. And he's, so now all of a sudden we've defeated some of our...
Well, there are one of two ways. There are one of two ways he can do that. He can either cut it down ahead of time, or you can say, the hell with that, I'm going to take it down during construction anyway and pay the fine. Mm-hmm. And believe me, I've seen plenty of people do that.
Oh, sure. And that's old school. That's kind of how... But I'm trying to make this work for... If we're going to put this language in place, it needs to be valuable.
Well, what's your objective? Is your objective to protect the landowner and let him do what he wants? Or is your objective to protect the tree? Because I'm having trouble following.
That's okay. The objective is not to write some language that means nothing. That's the objective.
No, what's the objective? What do you want the language to do?
Honestly, I'm looking at this saying, if I'm a landowner, I can go both directions. If I'm thinking ahead about the cost of survey trees, like we talked,
right.
Someone mentioned someone cut down a single tree on their lot. My immediate thought while the story is being told is, well, the guy probably needed to pay his taxes. He cut down a tree, sold the tree lumber off, wrote the bill, and now he's even. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of thing. Nobody thinks about that when talking about saving trees. Somebody's got to pay the taxes on the property.
So that same logic will cause someone, maybe they're transferring the property to a family member, maybe they're thinking about selling it someday, maybe they just want to cut down some firewood. Whatever it is, if we're trying to save trees, we need to do that on the front end and the back end, and not have this language that we're creating.
But you cannot do that and say we're going to save trees at any cost and meet the community values. So what we're saying is, when you apply for a clearing grading permit, this becomes active. We're not going to go out and KGB the neighborhood and say, we found your trees, we're going to record something against it, and you can't cut it. So you have to balance private property rights with the community's values when they say they want to save trees. And you can go any distance you want. I could point out some ordinances that I've seen in communities that go way beyond this. And so what we're trying to do is to say, when you come in and you want a permit and you want to change the existing situation, there is an opportunity to save trees. And you do it at some level. At some level, you have a cutoff. If it's you don't do it on any single family lots where they're adding, then we take it out. But if you want to save trees with any construction, you leave it in. If somebody wants to go around it, they'll find a way. But we're not going to stop them from going around it unless we over-regulate and say you can't cut the tree down.
So to answer the question you asked me a minute ago, I would say that if we're going to create language that restricts property, even if it's development time, mm-hmm. supposedly the bad guy's working in that window, if we're going to restrict that function, it ought to be for a good reason long term. And that's going to imply, that's going to float over into the next landowner.
Mm-hmm.
So if a tree is worth saving, really worth saving,
right.
it ought to be protected. If it's not worth that level, then let's don't even talk about it. That's kind of
what I think that's what we've done.
I think that's what.
I mean, that's what we're intending.
If you guys feel that way about it, I trust you.
No, what we're intending to do is, and what we do very often, is if there's an amenity like that on the property, you record against the property the proper protections. If somebody wants to take it down anyway, they can do it, and then you have a fine to counterbalance that. But you're not ever going to ensure that never will they take it down, but you're going to provide a reasonable advance notice, constructive notice, and a reasonable penalty if it happens, so that it is a deterrent that's accepted in the courts. I mean, you certainly can't go beyond what would be reasonable, or it wouldn't be enforceable.
The new section where we added, which page does this show up on in our packet? Page 20, it must be. You know, this. I think this is where the protection of those exceptional trees, it applies to either a single family homeowner or a development. 20. And so I think it gets to, you know, really D. Well, if it's not A, it's not hazard, dead, dying. You're not developing, so you're not putting in public roads or bridges. You're not looking at different development sites. So D, you know, if you have that house on that large lot, you have 10 exceptional trees, you want to do an addition, it's going to take one of those trees out. I think D, there's not an alternative development proposal that exists, your addition's going there, and it's going to take one of the trees out. I think that
And the wording,
there's flexibility in
the
that.
The wording is pretty clear because when you say we're necessary for public roads and bridges within existing public rights of ways, so they're already in the public domain in that case. Mm-hmm. In the next case, it's we're necessary for access to development sites provided there are no feasible alternative alignments. And alternative access shall be pursued to the maximum extent feasible. So we're trying to, you know, direct people with that language when they come in to develop, to save the trees. And those are the kind of thing, I mean, when we talk about this business of balancing different interests, you have to express your intent pretty clearly here. So if somebody's coming in to develop properties, they know that they're going to get a pretty strong push to save trees if there's a feasible alternative way to service, you know, the access.
I think that the language overall is going to do what we intend. We're going to be able to
safe. The slangs will do that. So the go-arounds will do whatever they do. They'll be caught and not caught. But by and large, we'll be left with a more uniform and free community in this story.
Right, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we had a very good arborist, and I think you had the pleasure of meeting him. But he sat with our staff all the way through this thing. We didn't feel like we had, the background to take a specialty like this and develop it completely. So he works in many other communities. He deals, it's funny, you think that arborists would champion trees alone, and they do. But they're the people who are out on the front line when somebody wants to take a tree down and is arguing with them about the danger of the tree, the health of the tree, or whether or not they want it on their property, and even on somebody else's property in the public right away. Mm-hmm. Larger these heritage trees are, the more people fear them, particularly when they stand alone, because a lot of these windshed issues are really important. Yeah. Because if they don't have protection of the forests around them, they don't have the structural stability that they need.
It's been too often recently that I've watched city council meetings, and while we sat here now for an hour and a half talking about this, in 5 minutes they will turn it all around. And then that might be crazy. Yeah. Say it ain't so, Dick. But it's so. I think we come to understanding here, but I have no confidence that the council will actually take it back.
So our next plan for process, if you guys make a recommendation tonight, we would take it to the council committee. That's on Tuesday, April 17th, 4:00 in our office, and we plan to have Jim there as our expert to really kind of help, describe to them the benefits of this and the changes that we might see, and we'll see where they go. But,
I'm just concerned about the regulatory issues that I've been showing. Mm-hmm. I'm sensitive tonight because what I hear them doing, mm-hmm. and I don't want them to go overboard with regulations to save every tree in town.
Yeah, I don't think because they would. We will get our legal team to review this too.
There's a point where it gets down to where you just can't control everything.
Very true.
Well,
The one thing that we're
experiencing, and I hope that it grows a little bit, is that we haven't really had a very organized group representing our business community here, because we have a chamber that's in our adjacent city that represents that city pretty well, but we're kind of the ugly stepsister, and we don't get much representation. So Robin and I are working with a group that is trying to get organized, because a lot of the zoning changes, a lot of the use changes, and a lot of the potential changes to zoning on their property have them extremely concerned, rightly so. And they need to be a part of the discussion, because that's the way democracy works. And when you have people on the one hand that may have other issues they're interested in, yet it really affects these folks very personally, they have to be at the table. So this group is starting to meet with us, and I hope that they organize, because you get a better decision when you balance all of the issues. We've learned from our national politics that swinging too far in one direction or the other is unhealthy. And so we really want to see everybody at the table. And I think you get better decisions that way. You move everybody kind of closer to one another. So I think some of the dynamics you've seen in the past are likely going to change. And we've seen a couple of the city council members that have probably been very involved in those dynamics sit on a subcommittee and listen to 12 members of the business community saying things that they started going, we weren't thinking about that. So you get a better balance when you have everybody at the table. So I think those dynamics are going to change you a little bit.
Yeah, I'm just say a couple things about this topic. You only have one chance to save some of these larger trees before going. So I think that's that's the key point on this. That's what we heard tonight, that the citizens don't want just a clear-cut and replant approach. I think that's how you get suburbia look. I think it's also not about just looking in the hills and saying, oh, there's trees up there. We don't need anything down here.
So yes, we can replant, and we will. We'll probably do a lot of that, but saving those significant trees and creating a multi-aged community is important, because you have, otherwise, you plant all the trees at the same time, there's a windstorm, they all go down at the same time. You know, they're, and a lot of times they're not native. They could be native, but the problem is a lot of times when they replant, they don't give enough room for a native tree to have the space there, because mm-hmm. you're jamming in development. So, I mean, a great way to do it, if there are trees on the property, that's kind of what we're talking about. And not every property has trees, but some do, and those are the ones that we can save. A lot of times in a block, that's preferred. But again, it's balancing the strong local economy with the rural character of the community. So it's not one or the other, but we can't just forget about why people move here. So I don't know. That's kind of, in general, we've been kind of chiming in a little bit about this document and a little bit about
right.
our 2 cents on the topic, but right. maybe we should circle back to what you had, Jamie.
Yeah,
some of those examples.
If you guys have questions, I can run through them quickly. We wanted to look at projects to see case studies of what changes are we going to see, and how are we doing? So it's in the packet as well. I'll put it up here. So, and I have a new one to add tonight, and then a couple pictures to show you. So the first project is next to the post office, and it's a 26,000 square foot lot, so 43,000 is about an acre. So it has 7 significant trees, and that's per the code right now. The placement of the trees is really helpful on this lot. There's 2 really large ones at the back, and then there's 5 along the side property line. In front, there's also some really nice trees that are actually on city property. So
this is a lush to on the east side of the parking lot, right?
Right. Yeah.
So what I saw, because I saw those trees and I mm-hmm. thought they were in the lot, but then
they're right.
So they're so
they are on the city.
And that is, what is their fate?
They will be saved. This restaurant is under review, but it's been stalled for a while. There was the chance that possibly one out of the five on the front might have to be removed, but at this point, it's a really high priority to retain them all, and we would let them limb them up to get visibility.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's a commercial business. They want visibility,
right.
And those trees are hiding their visibility.
Right. Yeah, well, they're going to be... There's a lot of visibility from the
here in the post office.
Right. Yeah. It's a balance, but again, those are some really nice trees. And again, we had the arborist go out and look at them. Are these worth saving? You know, again, we could lose one, but it's just, that's our character though, is when you're eating, if you're eating there at the restaurant, you're sitting there, you're seeing those beautiful trees as you look up to Mount Si. I mean, we can't just look up and you know, want to see them in the distance. So, right now, you'd be required to retain 15% of them or one. And you really could pick which one you wanted, because those are the significant, the 7. You could pick the smaller deciduous one on the side and not the 60-inch for at the back. So in the proposed code, the tree credits, you would have to retain the 0.25 per 1,000 square feet. And then just keep in mind for a commercial or industrial zone, it would be twice that. The downtown commercial, we reduced it to the 0.5. So you would need 6.56 credits. And because you have existing trees on the lot, you could meet this by 2 of the smaller trees on the property. Both of the firs could be considered exceptional with the new code, and it would favor saving those. And just so you know, the proposal is saving both of those. So I guess the point here is that you're going to save, you would save one more of the trees compared to the existing.
So to cut to the chase, start at the beginning,
seven significant trees. Mm-hmm. Of those, applying the existing code, how many could be removed?
Six.
Six out of seven.
The new code, you could remove up to five. Really, though, it's because of the size of the trees. So it's always, with the new code, it's that credits. So the 6.56 credits, when you go to the table and you say, well, what trees do I have to work with? I need 6.56. So you're only going to get six if you have a large 24-inch tree. If you had smaller ones, you'd need three of them. So it depends on the size. The next site is out.
Does the developer have a chance to negotiate with the city in terms of, you want, they have a right they have an obligation to say what, and the city, they'll negotiate.
Right.
Leave four. Do you get benefits back for developing credits?
You know, I wouldn't call it a benefit back for the credits. They're maintaining those credits, so if down the road they decide they need to take one of the trees, they'd be able to, no problem. But the code supports that this is the minimum. These are the minimum tree credits, and if there's a reason, if your building's here and you just want to take one over here, you don't get to. That you should retain more than the minimum if your site plan allows you to. So, you know, what I found going through these examples is really the sites that are going to get hit hardest are the ones without trees. Because, like I said, there weren't a lot on that site, just the couple that it you know, met, the couple that were there, met the proposal. So
I'm just saying that the access to that site is pretty minimal.
Yeah.
Off the highway. You've got to go into the post office to get
mm-hmm.
to it.
Yeah, it's a shared access.
So they have a right to do that, evidently.
Mm-hmm.
Use the government property for access.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and they're, you know, the restaurant's going to be kind of on that corner, so it'll be, I think it'll still be very visible, you know, and especially if we limb up those trees, we're happy to limb them up quite a ways because they're big trees. So I think it'll still be really prominent, and they have a deck area and paving pavers and stuff up to that corner, and then the corner with the sidewalks. So,
on what you said there, for the same site there, both of mm-hmm. the large firs could be considered exceptional. I mean, wouldn't they per the
right
the DBH?
Yeah, I just said, you know, based on, you know, the health, not having, you know, an assessment done with that, with these regulations, that I would guess they would be. So the code would say you need to save them, and the proposal, they are. Yeah. So that was kind of a win-win there. The next project is off Southeast North Bend Way, so it's next to the Mountside Tavern. It had some shipping containers on it for a while. I should have done IMAP just to show you a visual, but you can go back and look these up. But the site contained two significant trees and a cluster of three Doug firs that were not significant. Again, about the same size, a lot, like about a half acre. Existing codes, 15% of those significant trees would be required to be retained, and you can get a 10% reduction. So essentially, those two trees on the site could be removed, and that's what we were running into with, if you only had two, well, 15%, you know, do the math, it's, you could remove both trees. And then the applicant's arborist said, well, we don't want to leave one because, you know, then there'd be wind issues. And we have 11 site plans that we've looked at. We're unable to move our building because we want to have shipping and receiving, and we can't leave enough space to protect these trees. So we want to remove all the trees and we'll replant in lieu. There's landscape perimeter landscaping along the east and the north property lines, and they propose that 16 trees be put in this area. and a 3-to-1 replacement. So a total of 22 trees, they said, we'll replace on site and we'll remove what's there. And this application has since lapsed, but this is to show you kind of the thought process of the code.
And those trees would be mixed hardwood, softwood.
Right. They'd be in a... We have a type 2, type 3. You guys are going to get to this next with the landscape amendments.
What age would they be? 8, 10 years?
No, probably not. They'd be 4-foot minimum. So 4-foot minimum in height. We're going to be enhancing that. With your next amendments, you're going to be looking at landscaping standards. But
generally what, you know, at least horticulturalists recommend is that you plant 15-gallon size trees maximum. But because they don't adjust well and survive well, so they tell you to plant them at an optimum age so that they can adjust and mature properly. Mm-hmm. And so they never look good when you put them in because they're small. Mm-hmm. They're staked and taken care of, and we require a 2-year bond and maintenance agreement to get them established, and then off they go.
So, so that's where we ended up. We want to take all the significant ones down because we can't save them. We don't have space. It doesn't work with our site plan. And instead, we're going to plant 22 trees around the perimeter. The proposed code would say you need 0.5 of the tree unit credits per 1,000 square feet. For the size of lot we have, you'd need 12 credits. The three non-significant firs that were on the site would count for 6 of the credits, so half, and they would be saved. The applicant could still remove the 2 larger trees and replant 6 more. So, you know, it's like I said, it's always a balance. We're not going to capture everything. We would hope that we could save the larger trees in some places. This is just one scenario. They could save the smaller firs. So we're saving something more than what we had, and they're replanting.
Yes,
so
it seems to always be the big ones have the most visibility, and therefore we think we've got all the big ones cut.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see the big ones being cut down in the back area, just right on the highway.
What credit would you get for any of the larger ones if you left them?
They were...
That's too significant.
Yeah, it's too significant. Assuming they were, I think they were fell between the 12-inch and the 24-inch, you'd get a 4-tree credit. So you need 12. So you would need 3 to retain
so
3 of them.
Am I reading this right that you get fewer credits for the larger trees?
No, you get... Your max is the 6. You get 6 credits if it's 24 inches or larger. 4 if it falls in the middle.
Did those fall in the middle?
I think they did.
For each tree.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So you could save a combination of the 2 larger ones and
right. Ones. Yeah, that's where you get that flexibility. So those 11-inch firs fall in that category of 2 unit credits, so 2, 4, 6. But if you'd rather not save those 3 and you save the larger one, then you get to the 6 with the 1. So it's a math game. But
this is the spot where I, it looks like you went through the rest of the document and used exceptional instead of significant. But here in this, we're using significant. So do you mean exceptional when you say significant?
Well, for the example here, it's because they were called either significant or non-significant. So,
that's what I guess on the new, you know, you had the project facts, 2 significant trees. I guess it depends on the species, but if it was dug fir, then it'd be 30 inches or greater.
Right.
Site.
Right.
Yeah, in general, with this example, you know, without, we obviously don't know all the details here, but what it was before was it says all trees were allowed to be removed with replanting or fee in lieu. Now, obviously, replanting on site is better. Fee in lieu, to me, is not ideal at all.
Right.
You're losing everything that you have there. But you're in this case, you weren't saving anything. So, at least you'd be saving something. Right. Site. It's something that has a different age class.
Right. And also to note, for others too, is right now we have a fee in lieu that's about $200 per tree. We're going to propose that be more in the $550 to $700 range. We haven't completely settled on that, and that would be adopted in our taxes, rates, and fees. The other thing is our current code lets you go down by 10%, and we've been going away from that. And so this code sets, there's no reduction allowed. It's here's the baseline, and we want you to definitely save more.
What's your criteria for setting the cost of these trees?
We looked, well, Jim's recommendation of the cost of a planted 8-foot conifer or 2-inch deciduous. The cost of planting those, I think he said those were 6 to 8 years old usually, and the cost for soil amendment, buying the tree, planting it, what we were seeing was about $500, $550. Right. Buying, installing, you know, monitoring. And some cities have gone more, upwards of like $750.
Mm-hmm. To place a tree elsewhere in the city mm-hmm. with the funds that are working.
Yeah, and this proposed code really, as a very last resort, would let you do fee in lieu, if that's the last choice you have. And we again, we've been going in that direction without the code support as much as trying to replant on site, save on site.
Just a question on one example for Tompkins. Specific to trees, but I was caught up by the idea that they were using the trees in the buffer. Isn't there still, for this type of site, they would have still had a landscape mm-hmm. buffer requirement
yes.
in that area, and they were just electing to plant trees within that?
And they were going above and beyond. Okay. You know, it's commercial to commercial. It's a sparser planting, so you can go and add in additional. So that's the 22 were additional.
Code's great, the language, mm-hmm. the intent of it's great. The teeth of it is, I keep having the same question. Developer's perspective is the efficiency of being able to not deal with it
mm-hmm.
is a lot, it's worth a lot more than even 10 times $750. So the instinct in the beginning, mm-hmm. get rid of them because I don't have to deal with them. I have to pay the engineering to work around them. Mm-hmm. I can have the straightforward plan of the straight square lot, whatever they're mm-hmm. working with. So I'm struggling with
yeah.
our intent actually making sense for
right.
people who are writing a check.
I think that the new code supports that a lot more than what we have by setting up the tree inventory requirements, the preference for saving the trees, designing around them. It's a lot stronger than what we have.
But just using the example of fee in lieu slash mm-hmm. replant, mm-hmm. that whole conversation around keeping a tree or taking a tree.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, if I'm not misunderstanding, that even a significant tree, it's going to cost the developer $750 to not keep it.
Right. If we allow it to be removed, if they've met the minimum credits, and if, you know, it, there's no other feasible alternative, you've gone through the whole code and you know, designed it. Yes, there are still going to be significant trees taken.
I mean, we may get in a position where he says, well, I can't design around it, and we know, and we think he can. Mm-hmm. And if we get to that, he'll appeal our decision. Mm-hmm. You know, and seek relief elsewhere. We try to work with people as well as we can, and they may have a need to use 100% of their site because they want to maximize their return. And that's why you need to have something to have leverage on the public side.
So that's my question. What's the leverage really?
There's a couple of things. One is if you go through the code and you look at what some of the requirements are to taking out significant tree, you have to meet all those tests. There's no other way to design the site reasonably. And so far, we haven't said, you know, If you need a minimum of 10,000 square feet and you're pulling that out of the air, that's not good enough, you know. If you can design around it, if your site isn't big enough for that and preserving the tree, maybe you got the wrong property, you know. And we give them those kind of,
sure.
We don't just accept it for gospel that, well, I'm in the business and you don't know. I mean, I've negotiated enough leases with people that have BS'd me enough that I know that they'll use any argument they can.
They so think they're telling the truth, though.
I've worked on the dark side a lot. I know how it works. So you want to be able to, to make people think hard about it and get a different mindset and realize they have to do it. Nobody wants to build storm drainage improvements either like they have done this town. But it's required. You have to do it. And some projects don't work.
So, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse, but I don't think I am. The lot is under contract. Mr. Smith owns the lot. Ralph wants to buy it. And Ralph knows, comes in and talks about the coating, and he tells Mr. Smith, look, I'll close on the lot, but these trees need to go before closing. What happens?
Well, it depends on what happens when whomever brings the project in.
What's that? It
runs through and runs through the ordinance, and maybe they don't close.
There's no project for the city to know about. This is just the conversation between the buyer and seller.
And so what are they coming to me with?
Well,
I'm not going to be privy to their conversation.
Right.
When they walk in the door, what are they going to say?
If the developer, though, knows he's going to get a significant benefit to have trees on his property, mm-hmm. particularly if they're called significant trees, then he'll want to keep the trees, not get rid of them before he comes and talks to the city about a clearing and grading permit.
Mm-hmm.
That's the piece I feel like we're kind of missing. And it's... like you say, the dark side, that's the developer's world. It's all about mm-hmm. money. It's about getting financing, getting the houses built fast or whatever they're going to build mm-hmm. so they can not starve at the end of the day.
If they're significant trees, they have to get a permit to remove them to begin with. If they're in commercial property, that's what I understand. That's what the old ordinance says, what the mm-hmm. new one says.
But what Mr. Lucky is saying is exactly what these folks are saying. Stop it. Quit negotiating away our trees. Stop it. Yeah. You're saying that to us, can we hear it? We gotta stop using those trees for bait, for negotiating bait.
I guess it's protecting them one side or the other, not just in the middle of the development program.
I'm yeah. not sure if this answers your question at all, but it does say, as you went on page 20, that removal of exceptional trees shall not be allowed. First off, goes into a couple ways that it could be. As far as the single landowner, I think that would be going back to page 31 and changing to number 5. That would maybe say that has nothing to do with the clearing and grading permit. Just you can't remove an exceptional tree. You can remove it if it's hazard dead or dying.
Right.
But then they would not be able to go ahead of time, like you're saying. Because they would have to get a permit and kind of set, go through whatever protocols we have in place if that was the case.
So right now, the first owner in my example, the one who's thinking about selling,
mm-hmm.
he has to get a permit for taking down a tree on his property.
Based if it's
on
a significant...
If he
based
and...
what knowledge that he probably has.
Yeah. He has to come in and get a permit, and it depends on what kind of a tree it is. If it's an exceptional tree, mm-hmm. he's got to prove that it's...
Or it's his last tree on the site.
Yeah, he's got to prove that it has some kind of a health and safety danger, or that the tree is diseased, or there's some reason for it to be removed. If he can't do that, he doesn't get his permit. Now, he can go out and cut it down and take the fine.
Or replant or work something out with the city. I mean, yeah. It's going to happen. That people are not going to be educated about it. They're going to do it on accident.
Yeah.
They're not going to know what the rules are. It's going to happen, and it happens now.
When you do that in a forested environment, that's when the moratorium kicks in.
Right.
That's 6-year moratorium. You did take the trees down without getting permission to do it.
Hmm.
And do you think that... you should have something like that.
And it's per lot, huh?
It stops it right there. So you don't think about cutting first, developing in second. It's got to go together.
Right.
It's 7 years, David.
Seven.
Wow.
You've done no development for 7 years. If you
and you're required to replant, and yeah.
Well, I think we actually have two things, right? And whether it's being a realist or being a cynic, I see what you're talking about, which is this guy's like, I want to sell my property, and I've got this person interested in it, but they don't want to deal with trees, so why don't I take them down before we even split?
Yeah.
I get the idea, but I think that we have two different things going on. We have the ordinance in front of us, it's this clearing and grading, and then we have a second issue that I think it's clearly be something we need to be investigating with more focus, and maybe getting some passionate individuals in the community involved, which is that we clearly need to be looking at urban forestry, and that needs to be considered as whether or not we develop a more specific ordinance or set of rules that guide trees in general in our community, as unpopular as that is with people because they don't want to be told what to do with the trees on their property, is that we have this secondary issue that we need to be looking at. If we're serious about trees, if it is something that people really care about and think is central to what makes our community what it is, we need to have a plan for the trees. And that is going to require the city council getting behind the idea that it is a financial priority to start looking at what it would take.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would require, I believe, if I remember from the first meeting with the arborist,
mm-hmm.
having an urban forester hired
mm-hmm.
who would do a citywide
survey
inventory of the trees that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to address this issue. There's nobody in the corner cutting down their trees so they can sell the property to a developer that doesn't want to deal with this part. If we have a more overarching strategy for preserving trees, or for encouraging the preservation of
and
trees.
Education, you know, that's
exactly.
A big component of the urban forestry programs, you know, just education.
And I know that, you know, this that Michael brought into us today is also a lot of what I heard at that first meeting
mm-hmm.
in terms of people's focus on all the health effects and things of trees. So we have this, which is a very specific thing, and we clearly have another mission that we need to be
mm-hmm.
bringing back. Maybe getting the city council to let the commission discuss whether or not we need
mm-hmm.
to develop an urban
mm-hmm.
forestry ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
I love what you said, and I'll put a hopeless cap on my comments for it.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be some thought about before and after this permit control device. The clearing and grading permit can't be the end and the start of the conversation.
Right.
If you're going to protect the tree, you need to think ahead and behind. And then, to me, there's no conversation that's clear about fines and penalties.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, you know, if you speed, there's a penalty. Everybody kind of knows what it is. But if you don't know what it is, you may as well not have it, because getting caught is not going to stop the tree from getting removed.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a very political thing. We hear that.
Oh, sure.
Which is this, don't tell me what to do on my property.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's again, it's this idea of balance. How do you get where everybody's saying they want to go when people are not going to like the teeth element that you're talking about? Essentially, we have to rely on being able to develop carrots that are sufficiently interesting enough
well said.
That we don't need sticks.
Yep. There should be big carrots for big trees.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right, I'll just say in general that this is a planning commission deliberation, and normally we aren't taking any comments or questions from the public, but it is the planning commission, and we are a pretty friendly bunch, so did someone have a question back there?
Okay, well,
there
two here,
go first.
Well, Elizabeth, I'm like screaming here. The county has a program called PBRs, the Public Benefit Rating System, and it's a pretty long checklist, and if you're a significant landowner, you can apply for this program, and you get a significant tax reduction in your property tax because of that. If you have recreational lands or trails or significant trees or view sheds or all kinds of things on your property, then these are assets, not only to yourself, but they're also assets. that is the carrot. Of course, there's a stick. If you decide to come out of that program, then there's fines and penalties for that. And if you sell your property and you have the public or insist upon your property, if the person who purchases it continues on, then they also will get that tax reduction on the property taxes. But if they decide to come out of it, then they have to pay also back taxes. So the missing component here, I mean, I'm all for ordinances and regulations and rules and stuff like that too. But I think when I said I think my plan is to develop a tree, I think that there has to be an incentive for people to save their trees. They have to look at their trees as assets, not only to themselves, but the entire community. And there should be a mechanism for you to be able to write off, possibly on your property taxes, every year you put that tree on your property.
Just a point of clarification. The county has that ability because they assess and tax for property tax. The city doesn't. In fact, the city gets a very small piece of that property tax. So, keep your... There's a battle going on nationwide between states, counties, and cities. And we're getting mandates from states, and counties are having to take a bigger load as well. And so we're getting state mandates without funding, and that's why a lot of this regulation is coming down. And so you have to implement those regulations, and it really takes money away from people in the cities who need it for parks and streets and other things. So you have to tailor your incentive toward where you have an asset to share or something that you can give away or something that you can use as a carrot. So that would work very well for a county, but it's not a good model for a city. I'm not saying we shouldn't look for a carrot, but that is a very unique one that can have a lot of mileage with people that we don't have the ability to use, unfortunately.
I can understand that, but I think in the long term, we need to start finding these ways in order to... The true cost of things is never really fleshed out. So if you really do start adding up the true cost of clean air and shade and water retention, all these other things, then what it costs the city in the long run to run the show without these things, you're not getting a true picture of that. I think it takes a bold move from the parts of cities and communities to actually start working in that direction. It doesn't mean we're going to come up with it overnight. But it would be interesting, especially if we're talking about tree inventory, which I think for years, I was on the park board, we talked about that then, years ago, tree inventory for the city. But again, just like with the increase in our property taxes, which is exorbitant, for the types of services that we're not getting, the true cost of things are not really being associated with what we're having to pay. And I think the community would be much more willing to step up to the plate and save what is important if there was an incentive of some type. And what that would look like for our community, this question, we spent quite a bit of time already talking about that, because you know, and I know, that, well, why would anybody want to hassle with these rules and regulations? I'll just cut it all down. I'll just pay the fees. So if we're trying to create a new model, then we definitely need to look at all aspects of it. And the county's program is very interesting, but from a standpoint of me as a landowner, it doesn't go far enough. It really doesn't go far enough. And I think there is almost something to be worked on.
Right, and just to point out too that the if you do take a tree, the enforcement, could be that it could be $40,000 per tree. If it's a large tree. And the plant appraisal, we saw in this article, and then what the arborist showed when like in Snoqualmie, when they developed their parkway and they put the value of those trees, that's the value. So I think there is an incentive not to go and remove them, you know, because of the cost that could be endured. It could get substantial really quickly.
Yeah, I think it's a good comment.
Yeah.
You know, there is, it reminds me of like an open space designation, you know, to mm-hmm. a degree, and I think your comment, Dave, was more just about the financial gain to the city. Mm-hmm. It's that, I don't know if that's the point. You know, if there was a canopy target for the city, which we don't have yet, it would help right. in that way, you know, and it would help the landowner. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
Could be an option.
Mm-hmm. All right, well,
you have one more.
That one, just one point is, you know, if you're looking for suggestions on other changes, I'll share with you a little bit of experience in the forest. We went through a major project in our neighborhood simply to try to repair sidewalks and keep trees. And again, as I said earlier, we were able to save every last tree through doing quite extraordinary things. However, our sidewalks are in fact private. They're not in the city right away. But we were able to do this because those turn out to be our sidewalks. So one of the things I'd like people to look at are things like our sidewalks code and things of that nature, that maybe we need different types of sidewalks. Maybe it's an obstacle, you know, so trees are very close to the sidewalks. Maybe our construction standards are wrong. Okay. You know, those kind of things that are really causing people to take out their trees. I had a terrible argument with my HOA association, and I was on the opposition. And I managed to convince every homeowner to save their tree through using different methods. So no one took out a tree, but it was hell just to do this with our HOA. So I can say it's very tough even to save, even like look at sidewalks and the damage that a tree can cause, even a minor one. You know, ripping up sidewalks, and in some cases, the city owns the sidewalks, or it's in the city right away. In our case, we had a very new plan, so this was terrifying. So anyway, we were able to do some things that you weren't able to do. But I would like to say is that maybe the city also needs to look at simple incentives, like, hey, do we need simpler sidewalk standards, or, you know, how do we encourage people to do their trees, or new developments, like, hey, alternative materials, you know, routing sidewalks. So I do want to say that it's hard to keep these things, though. Our neighborhood's like half acres. It's hard to keep them, even in those size lots. The trees don't stand a chance in cottage residential. They don't stand a chance in a quarter acre LDR. Okay, and we're having trouble keeping ours at half acre. I mean, I'm just getting that this is going to be very difficult. And one of the things that I think is important, and it was brought up, was how do you stop the clear cuts before the development? And stop that. That was a very nice feature. So I like where this was headed. At the same time, you know, I recognize the pragmatics of utilities and everything else that are so hard after a neighborhood has been there 30 years. So anyway, I really appreciate the time the folks have taken. But maybe there's other things in the code that we need to think about that help people keep the trees they've got.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's after 9, so just to check in as far as how we're feeling. Unless you want to continue.
What's left?
Well, what's left would probably be just kind of, I mean, you know, maybe this summary that Jamie has.
Yeah, I've got, I mean, I could just
yeah,
a couple minutes give you the rest of the summary
and then it's
gonna comparison.
Go into, if we have specific edits, I think.
Yeah.
And if we don't, then we'll move it into a recommendation.
Right. Two other sites that I could. Just, I won't, you know, probably less detail is better at this hour. A 5-acre plat, single family. Under the existing code, you would have 132 trees that would need to remain or be preserved. A portion would be in lieu. You'd have 55 on site. Under the new code, you'd get 148 on site. Again, with that fee in lieu as like the last alternative. So I think under that scenario, you're getting more trees on site under the new code requirements. The other one that we looked at was the River Glen plat. That plat did not have a lot of trees on it. So there were no significant trees, actually, per the current definition. The way that resulted was they planted 426 trees. if you go around, it's, you know, it's new, so it looks, it doesn't look like a lot. Under the proposed code, they would be looking at, so 600 would need to be planted. So an increase in that. And again, I think that's where the impact is the developments don't have the trees. They're going to really be required to replant on site. The last one that Chair Heller had asked me to look at was the cottages at North Bend development. And as far as that one goes, it's about 6 acres. They were required to retain 52 significant trees per the code. They were allowed to reduce that for our standards, and they left 31 trees. As you know, they're at the front and at the back of the development. I think it's going to be sideways, and I can't do anything about that. there they are, the ones at the front. And then the ones at the back are by the Tanner Tanner Trail. So 31 trees were saved, and then they're replanting 63 on site that you probably haven't seen either planted or grown up. They also paid a fee in lieu of $42,000, nearly $42,000. Under the new code, they would be required to retain between 44 and 65 trees. In comparison to the 31 that they saved. So you would see that difference on site.
Did the city have title to that full 100-foot right-of-way from the railroad?
No, the property owner purchased it, and then we received 40 feet, I believe. Yep. So, you know, just some other pictures I took that aren't upside down. So here's River Glen. Here's the park where the replantings just occurred. Just to show you some pictures there. Well,
that's if you look at that historic photo,
right,
the area that's right there, mm-hmm, is that the old latch farm.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
The old what, say again?
The Pulte, the River Glen development. Yep. Here's Cedar Falls. This is just to show you, this is a tract, an open space tract. It's a small one within the Cedar Falls development where we put some trees back. And they're growing up there. Here's another picture of that same area. Along the frontage, you know, there we have the larger trees that we were able to retain, and these are the smaller ones that are now growing up. And kind of getting that look, I think, that we all want of having a mixture. Yeah.
Okay.
And then here's a side tract, again, having some nice trees that are starting to grow up in the development. Picture of the park, again, you know, able to kind of retain some of the bigger ones, plant some new to get that look. And this is, again, Cedar Falls, where there was a preserved area, and having the trees there within the development. I think that might be all the pictures I was able to take. But this is the one that was sideways that I passed around. So hopefully that puts it into perspective somewhat of, you know, existing and what we could look to get.
Yeah. That's a lot of information.
Yeah, it is. And some assumptions, because our current inventories don't show those smaller trees, just the larger ones.
I mean, look at the new North Bend Cedar Falls site.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of trees on that site. Are we going to be able to change? Are we going to be able to walk on that site?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're above the retention. Yep. I don't know.
Yeah. I have to look back. Let's see.
guess we're kind of on to chapter 19:10.
So we went through this last
couple
we went
times.
Through this a couple of
yeah.
times. I missed one of them, but we went through just about every page I did last month. I know Jim, you aren't here, so does anyone have a specific page or any edits at all?
My main comment is we still have a few places in here, particularly the definitions, where they weren't numbered.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So there's 13129 development.
Mm-hmm.
Have a number.
Right. Well,
yeah.
So we'll get all those. Yeah, it's just a formatting nightmare at this point if it's changing. So we will get that. Yeah.
I only have one word that didn't know what you were saying. That is a retail tree. Along 18, 19, first word retail trees. What were you trying to say there?
Line 19?
18.
Oh, sorry, 18.
Page 19.
I think it's retained.
Retained?
The L. Good catch. Retained trees. I don't know what retail trees are either.
I'm trying to stop being a...
Probably need it.
Any other either provisions you'd like to see changed or things that are like diagnosing?
My part, I kind of raised my hand this earlier than I realized that I was misreading this, but I don't think that I was. I just think I didn't see it fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
What the session was, they got off on a tangent, so maybe.
Yep.
Other people have the same problem, so if you just line up with it,
yep.
To make it easier to read what we're into,
right.
It just seems to be so tight.
Yes.
And I think this seems to be, my point of view, it's going to be softened up as you go through the kids of the council, I think. But I think that I would encourage us to stay as strong on this as we can.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you've done a good job in addressing the issue.
It's a good step in the right direction.
Retention for future projects. And I do like the idea that this was talking about getting the community more involved in just doing a maybe an arbitrary project to get things going about trees.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see that very much in this town, but Casey would be very willing to be a part of an arbitrary project. I guarantee you that. We did all of the italics from the North Carolina.
I agree. This is a good step.
Mm-hmm.
If this is an intermediate mm-hmm. step in
yeah.
support of that kind of move,
mm-hmm.
it's not quite all the way there yet, but
mm-hmm.
it's something that would easily lead into
yeah.
A more developed citywide program.
Right.
Right.
Well, I'm just thinking, Jamie, about what you said. You got the math from somewhere that there could be a penalty something in there, $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
That was based on a
value. It's based on an appraised value of, they call it the Guide for Plant Appraisal. And it's a document that values trees, and it's arborist value. And so the first meeting we talked
about replacing the tree kind of thing.
Yeah, the first meeting we talked about it, well, I think it really details it on the last page of what Michael passed out, but like those trees in Snoqualmie were valued at like $45,000.
60 for one of them.
Right.
During the construction project where they put in the boardwalk
mm-hmm.
blocking area, each of those trees was circled off with giant signs on every side telling you exactly what each tree was worth.
Right.
And it varied from tree to tree
mm-hmm.
depending on the exact size of that tree.
Right.
And I watched that whole project. They were very careful
yeah.
of those trees.
Yeah. It's the guy who has a DA can understand that language, right?
Your boss right. mess up. Yeah.
Again, there's a difference between, you know, you're an active development project, you know, you've had these trees bonded, you know the value, versus your homeowner, oops, you know, we're not going to charge a homeowner $60,000, you know, for the tree. We're, you know, there's different thresholds here. But.
So I like the idea of not, quote, threatening all of our neighbors by
right.
giving them some notice that, hey, if you cut down a tree on a Sunday afternoon, it might cost you $40,000.
Right.
It'd be a crazy step to take.
Right.
But in the context of applying for clearing grading permit, which is what this is all about, mm-hmm. some language in the form of a notice seemed appropriate. Mm-hmm. Where it's right up there up front.
So right.
You're going to get this permit, and here's how this starts.
Right.
Be aware.
Right.
Now that you're in the mix, mm-hmm. this could be the penalty.
Right.
And I've got a super rough draft I'll even throw into the wind right now. The notice would be somewhere along with the permit,
mm-hmm.
first page.
Right.
Any significant tree removal absent permit are subject to penalties, which may include fines and or
mm-hmm.
development moratorium.
Right.
That'll put them on notice.
Right.
Then they've got to make sure they ask the right questions.
Right. Yeah. And it's in here, what, you know, on page 30, it's in here what their enforcement would be. So we can definitely put that as conditions of the permit.
Do you want to share that with them at some point? To include it in? I just did.
Yeah.
It's on the list. Well, I guess for me, you know, Jamie talked about the process, and this will go to the City Council, the CED
mm-hmm.
next. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm kind of ready to have a new set of eyes on this. I think we've done some good work, and it's a lot. It's fairly dense, really. But I think it's a step in the right direction. So, if nothing else, I think we would move to approve.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so
recommendation to council.
Yeah. Can I get a motion to approve the tree retention amendments to the North Bend Municipal Code, Chapter 19, clearing, grading, filling, and drainage, as amended. This evening. All right. A second.
Brian seconds.
Right. Seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Opposed? Okay. The motion carries. It's unanimous. Okay. So one thing I'd like to consider adding to the agenda is our next Planning Commission topic, and just it can be draft, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know things, but you guys hinted at something that you know,
mm.
wouldn't know about otherwise, which I think is the landscape plan, which would be next.
Right.
So, just so we have a heads up, because we don't always get the email until
right
maybe a week before or something like that, which we agreed to, you know, on
mm-hmm.
that timeline. But at least at this meeting, if we know the general topic, I think that will be.
Yeah,
this
that's
is kind of like a next steps kind of meeting.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. We did give you the couple meetings ago now, the schedule for the year, but
and
it always changes.
Exactly. That's why I don't.
Well, it more just shifts.
Okay. Yeah.
You know.
But just.
Yeah.
We can update it and bring it back.
Yeah, we can update it, bring it back, and then for the like next meeting, you know, here's what's coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to, you know, you could do that. I know that that's paperwork to do that, but I think just in general, you know what.
What's next
you
on
know,
the horizon?
You know, we do that for our own planning anyway. So.
Yeah, you guys kind of know what's in your head, what's next. So
yeah.
I wouldn't say necessarily the piece of paper, but
right.
just a
yeah.
like that.
We'll update that for ourselves anyway. So
okay.
that'd be the talking point
okay.
to bring that.
All right. Well, anything for the good of the order? All right.
The order is good, Mr. Chair.
Awesome. I guess it's a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Yeah.
All right.
You guys get busy with only four of you.
The motion carries.